What is up, Cubulus family? Hello and welcome to another edition of Ball Street. It's week four, and we're here on the Cubulus Stock Exchange talking stock up, stock down, and all things in between. My name is Brett Ford. I'm your host here with analyst Chris Helly. Chris, how is your week four from a fantasy perspective and from a reality perspective?
From a reality perspective, I'm a little bit broken down emotionally, a Penn State fan, so I had a heartbreaking loss there. Even the Eagles, you know, we were able to pull it out, but that game just wore me out to watch. So from a real-life perspective, I'm emotionally drained. From a fantasy perspective, doing all right, hanging in there in a few of my leagues. It's been all right, surviving, but this last week I had two losses of less than a point. So, you know, hanging in there.
Yeah, it's always good to do, you know, your mental health check-ins with fantasy and things like that. I also had a not fun week of football with the Ravens underperforming in Kansas City, Lamar getting hurt, Cooper Rush coming in, and it's going to be a long couple of weeks until Lamar comes back, especially sitting at 1-3 and in desperation mode for Baltimore. So, as far as fantasy goes, I think I went about 500 this week. I think I got two out of four wins that I wanted as far as like important leagues. But nothing. I feel like I ran into Puka Nacua everywhere I went. Like, I feel like every opponent that I ran into had Puka Nacua this week, and it was just frustrating to watch Puka just do his thing really, really well. Against me in several scenarios.
Yeah, he's unreal. I was down pretty big going into last night's games, and I had Justin Fields, and I was hoping he would put up 30 points, and he had that 40-yard rushing touchdown, and I'm like, don't give me hope. And it came down to it, and I lost by 0.8, and I was just like, you know, if he had put up like 15 points, I would have been fine. I had already kind of come to terms with the loss. The breathing life into me was just a little bit unappreciated.
Monday Night Football doubleheaders will do that to you. And the unfortunate thing about Monday Night Football is it came at a cost. One of the top wide receivers in the league suffered a major injury, one of two major injuries this week to high-talent wide receivers. Tyreek Hill, gruesome leg injury. Reports coming out that multiple ligaments torn, kneecap dislocated, just absolutely gross. Don't watch the replay if you are squeamish, but he is out for the remainder of the season and likely potentially longer than that. And then, of course, Malik Nabers with the ACL explosion heard around the world as the New York Giants defeated the Los Angeles Chargers. So there's some silver lining for Giants fans, but Nabers going down is no good for anybody.
Yeah, you don't like to see it. You know, the league is better and football is better when you have these star guys on the field. It's really sad to see them both go down, and especially in Tyreek's case at his age, you don't know. I mean, he had the surgery right away, but he might not, depending on the timeline, be ready for the start of next year. Miami, when their plans for the future are kind of up in the air with his contract. So, you know, it might be the last we see Tyreek Hill in a Miami uniform, or maybe in on the field at all. We don't know.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I thought his reaction on the cart was strange. I'll leave it at that. I don't know if it was maybe just out of context and he was celebrating something different, but he seemed way too happy being carted off that field.
I'll take it as he appreciated the fans cheering that they were happy to have had him, and he was just showing his appreciation back to it. We'll choose to go for that.
Fair enough. Looking at some running backs around the league, there were some injuries at running back as well. Jaylen Warren was a surprise inactive in Dublin for the Steelers. He should return. I haven't seen any injury news on Warren other than what led up to week four. And then Bucky Irving got an MRI out of nowhere on Monday. Obviously two major cogs in the running back landscape moving forward. What are we thinking about either of those injuries?
Yeah, the Jaylen Warren one is weird because I remember the reports leading up to the week where that he was trending toward playing. So Sunday morning, it was very surprising to see that they scratched him from the active roster. And so I would expect him to be back this week. Bucky is the real question mark that, you know, Todd Bowles doesn't, he's not commenting on what the injury is. But if it needs an MRI, it's soft tissue. So, you know, we have no information there with what the severity is or even where it is on his body. So that's just a huge question mark.
Now, speaking of soft tissue injuries, we saw Braylon Allen leave last night's game. Also, the Jets running back suffered what appears to be an MCL sprain. He was placed on the IR. Another knee injury, Ricky Pearsall, San Francisco wide receiver, left with a knee as well. He did not practice on Tuesday. He's questionable for week five. Are there any 49ers offensive pieces left other than CMC?
Well, pretty soon we might be getting George Kittle back. Jake Tonjes is hanging around. Juwan Jennings. San Francisco and their training staff needs to figure out something because they're doing everything wrong. Whatever they're doing, it's not working.
Then a couple other wide receiver injuries. Cedric Tillman, Calvin Austin, Darnell Mooney, all knocked, hurt, injured. Tillman looks like it's going to be multiple weeks, and Mooney might also be multiple weeks, and then Calvin Austin just kind of waiting to hear news. All of them kind of wide receiver three flex considerations in deeper leagues. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the one that I am the most in tune with is probably Mooney. I think his they don't think is too severe. And they have a bye this week, so I think the team is expecting him to be available and not miss any games after the bye. So I think that's probably, you know, least one in consideration there. Cedric Tillman's a little bit of an issue because Isaiah Bond's starting to carve out a little bit of a role. They've got a quarterback change. So, you know, things in Cleveland are a little fluid right now. So him missing time, potential long-term time, is pretty bad for his role in the offense. And Calvin Austin is... He is what he is. We don't know really how severe the injury is, but we know even if he's fully healthy, he's kind of a desperation flex play.
Yeah, hopefully your fantasy lineup stayed intact. 4 weeks into the season, I'm sure everybody's had to pivot at least somewhere in their lineups in one of their leagues. So just remember to stay fluid, stay up to date on the news, and do your best to field the best lineup possible. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk stocks up and stocks down after this. Welcome back to Ball Street, the QB List Stock Exchange. I'm Brett Ford here with Chris Helly talking stocks up and stocks down, players whose performance has dictated a shift in the market. And we'll start with guys who had a rough week, maybe a rough couple of weeks, who've seen their stocks tumble. And maybe some of them might be buy low candidates. I don't want to spoil anything quite yet, but let's start at running back, where the Baltimore Ravens just refused to utilize Derrick Henry. Only four carries in the first half against the Kansas City Chiefs when it was a close game, and only four more as the game slipped away. So a total of eight carries for 42 yards. It's the second week in a row that he's been off the field more than he's been on it. Justice Hill, of course, on the field as the Ravens pass catching back. Where do we stand with King Henry?
It's just confusing. I don't know. He's very efficient when he's on the field and they give him the carries. You're the Baltimore fan. You probably know a little bit more than I do. If I were in the Ravens shoes, I would expect his snap counts and carries to increase, especially with Lamar out. But it's weird. Something's going on in the waters there.
I'm trying really hard not to shout into the microphone to fire Todd Monken, the Ravens offensive coordinator. He has done a wonderful job for the better part of two seasons leading up to this and has baffled me so far this season. I will try very hard to stay professional. It is very frustrating to watch Derrick Henry succeed and then be eliminated from the game plan. Regardless of game script, it is very difficult to watch him succeed every time he touches the ball and then not touch the ball anymore. It doesn't make sense. I'm not a football coach. I just watch the games on Sundays, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine it's a thing where they're, you know, punishing him for the fumbles or anything. Like, it's just a really odd choice of scheme and personnel. It's just, there's really no reason to point toward it.
Sometimes, and I don't want to get too deep down the Ravens fandom rabbit hole, but sometimes it feels like in matchups with Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow and, you know, Tom Brady back in the day, that the Ravens were more concerned with showcasing Lamar Jackson than they were with winning a football game. It just seems like that's how the play calling has trended for a couple of years now, is that they are very excited about showing off Lamar, whether he's chasing down an MVP or not, just showcasing him against elite quarterback talent and proving that he is the better of the two talents seems to be a priority for some reason. I'm sure that's just me looking at it with like black tinted glasses, like not like just completely overanalyzing the situation, but man, they get into prime time or they get into a matchup with the Chiefs or the Bills and they're just like, you know what? We don't need to run the ball. Lamar, show them what you can do. And then he plays a little bit of hero ball and things happen either good or bad. We've seen good from Lamar in those situations. We really have. But more often than not, it does not work out. And we are left questioning whether Derrick Henry, still exists on the Ravens roster or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those situations that I don't see, like, where there's a microcosm within some game scripts of teams see they have something working all game and they find a need to change things up to try to, I don't know, beat the curve. Maybe they're just outsmarting themselves. Like, I think there's probably something going on there where Monken's just like, they know we're going to hand it off to Derrick Henry, so let's do something else. Or, you know, let's try to put these personnel groupings and these personnel on the field so that we're not tipping our hand for the rest of the year. I think he's just getting too cute with it.
I think Monken got shook by the Lions. I think when the Lions stopped Derrick Henry on three consecutive run alignments, run formations, and run plays on the goal line 2 weeks ago, I think that just rattled him. I don't know. Since that series, the play calling has been weird. But that's just me as a fan. I don't know. I'm probably biased, but that's fine. Let's move on before I start chewing out more Ravens personnel. Nick Chubb has ceded some workload to Woody Marks in the Houston Texans backfield. Chubb, obviously the RB1 coming into the season, got the majority of the workload for the first 3 weeks of the season, 2.5 weeks of the season. And then in week four, Marks has seemingly taken over that backfield. Now, it could have just been a hot hand situation, but pretty sure he out-touched Chubb, out-carried Chubb on Sunday, and looked really good doing it.
Yeah, I mean, they play the Titans, so that helps some. And I don't blame the coaching staff for wanting to see what they had in a rookie that, you know, they drafted kind of late. So I would imagine if you're the head coach of an NFL franchise and you have the personnel depth that they do, you know, you have Nick Chubb, who's at the age that he is, and you're in a plus matchup, I could totally understand why they want to see what Woody Marks is capable of. And Woody Marks looked good, frankly. Like, and I know Tennessee is not the strongest output, strongest defense, but like Woody Marks passed the eye test for sure.
Yes, he did. And he's one of many rookie running backs who looked good last week. Don't want to spoil too much in the future of the show here, but rookie running backs had a good week.
Yeah.
We'll move to Minnesota, where Jordan Mason saw a little bit of his workload lost to backup running back Xavier Scott. Injuries to the O-line and Scott getting some of the receiving work might cut into Mason's production. The Steelers play the Browns next weekend, which that's a pretty stout defense so far this season. What are we looking at with Jordan Mason in the Minnesota backfield?
Yeah, the Vikings play the Browns. I mean, with the injuries to O-line, the Steelers were dominating the trenches. I was watching that game very closely, and then Jordan Mason was really struggling to get some openings there. And Xavier Scott, I think, was kind of the backup option. And when he saw the field, they really used him in the passing game. And that was where they found a little bit more success than on the ground. And, you know, as that game was kind of evolving, the game script led to them kind of needing more work through the air there. So I think this is a situation where I'm not overly concerned with Jordan Mason's share of carries, but I am a little bit afraid of his efficiency with the injuries to the O-line, and if there's going to be negative matchups, strong defensive fronts that they'll be facing. That's where I have a little bit of fear for Jordan Mason to continue the output that he had the first few weeks.
Yeah, especially if they get into negative game scripts like they did against the Steelers this past week in Dublin. Obviously, Carson Wentz there instead of J.J. McCarthy at the moment, maybe permanently, who knows? But yeah, the fact that Scott was on the field so much as they were trailing, as they were passing, is concerning for Mason managers for sure. Let's move to tight end, where Saints tight end Juwan Johnson, who started the season white hot, caught just 3 receptions for 28 yards on Sunday. Is he back to being kind of a question mark, a streaming tight end type, or is he still on the field enough for us to think that he can retain that tight end one billing that he earned for the first 3 weeks?
Yeah, I think he probably is leaning more a little into the streaming category spot start. You know, we see it all the time with guys have one or two good weeks in a row, and we're just assuming the whole season's going to continue to play out that way. And, you know, the signs were there. He was being designed to be the featured option for the first few weeks there. But, you know, Chris Olave caught his first touchdown. Rashid Shaheed's very involved. They have some more weapons in the passing game that are starting to emerge. And the Saints offense is an offense that isn't super high volume. You know, they run a lot of plays, but, you know, it's not the highest producing offense. That if there's no guarantee that Juwan is going to be getting the target share that he was the first few weeks, then you have to be way more concerned to put him in your lineup.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, Spencer Rattler played relatively well, has played relatively well for Spencer Rattler so far this season. But, I mean, he's still a bottom tier quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, I'd rather try to hitch my wagon to one of the elite guys if possible, even if the tight end usage and tight end production isn't quite the same, tight end usage rather is not quite the same. I'd rather have an elite quarterback throwing to my guy. Wide receiver in Buffalo, Josh Palmer, just not living up to what we thought he could be this season. Khalil Shakir stepping up in that offense. Dalton Kincaid stepping up in that offense. Are we going to see Palmer ever get an opportunity here, or is he just kind of the odd man out in an offense with so many mouths to feed?
I think it's looking like he's turning into the odd man out. You know, week one was his highest snap share of the season, and that's each week decreased as the year has gone on. As you said, the other guys are starting to emerge in this offense, and I had mentioned in the past there are these offenses that I point to Green Bay as the most obvious parallel of, just with so many mouths to feed and an offense that has different layers to it. It almost seems like each week is just a shuffle the bag and someone's going to produce, and it's really hard to predict. So when there's just all the different playmakers around, with a guy who's trending downward in snap shares, it's really hard to have any faith that even if he does start to carve out more time on the field, that he's going to be a relevant and reliable fantasy option.
Yeah, 100% agree. I have Palmer in a couple places. I'm looking to move him or find a waiver wire replacement, because you know, one or two catches for 10 or 15 yards just isn't going to cut it. let's take a look at a couple guys that we are interested in buying low. You have a couple really interesting names on our show sheet this week. Why don't you share at least a couple of them?
Yeah, first and foremost is Marvin Harrison Jr. And, you know, it's a buy low because I know he just had a good week from a fantasy production standpoint. But if I'm thinking through the lens of a Marvin Harrison owner who struggled with him the first few weeks, and through the first half of that game against Seattle, people were calling him a bust on Twitter. It was about as bad of a half of football as I have ever seen from a receiver. And his value was probably at the lowest it could have possibly been. And when he caught that touchdown, you could just see the emotions as he was kneeling on the ground, just relief. And I think that was a thing that I think is absolutely crucial is, you know, these are football players, but they're people too. I think that's an absolute flip of the coin for him. You know, he is the number one receiver on the team. I think people in the fantasy space get very momentum driven with fantasy, where when a player is not doing well, you're just starting to discount him for the rest of the year. So if I'm putting myself in through the lens of a Marvin Harrison owner, they might be looking to cash out on him after the big week. So that's why I still consider him a buy low. And I think that he will provide that, you know, wide receiver two with potential upside level production for the rest of the year.
Yeah. NHJ was, it just, whatever his halftime playlist is, I need that on my streaming list, or, you know, my Spotify, whatever music he's listening to at halftime, I need that playlist, because he locked in. Like, second half of that game, he looked like a completely different player. And super exciting to see it happen, because he's a stud. He was a stud in college. Hasn't quite shown off other than flashes of brilliance in the NFL so far. But hopefully, you know, being able to flip that switch at halftime, hopefully something clicks and he's able to sustain that kind of performance level, because it really was fun to watch in that second half. Another wide receiver that you have listed here is one that might not be on the team he's currently on for much longer if he continues to do his thing on social media. I see you shaking your head as an Eagles fan, but it's A.J. Brown. Talk to me about why you are looking to buy low on A.J. Brown and whether or not you think he sticks around in Philadelphia.
Well, I'll nip that one in the bud first. I do think he sticks around in Philadelphia. After reading the book on the sideline last year, and New England fans were so convinced he was going to be with them this year, I have just everything under my skin about, you know, the potential trade talks around AJ. He's not going anywhere. Okay. Now he's a buy low. I think we saw it last week, right? He's obviously still probably a top five receiver in the league, and, you know, the Eagles offense right now is still working out the kinks. We've talked about it before, where first time offensive coordinators are still kind of getting used to the ropes. They're still figuring out their offense. Some adjustments need to be made. And I think that AJ Brown's concerns and, you know, how vocal he has been is going to be heard by the coaching staff. I think we're seeing with the Eagles offensive line that it's not the same level of offensive line that we had last year. We can't give Saquon 25, 30 carries a game and expect him to put up 150 and two touchdowns on the ground anymore. The Eagles are going to have to rely on the passing game. And A.J. Brown is the number one receiver on the team. Jalen Hurts is a very capable quarterback. Get it in A.J.'s proximity and he's going to catch it. You know, he's a red zone target. His red zone target share into the end zone is third best in the league at around 67%. And he's just an animal after the catch too. And we saw it 2 weeks ago. So I think if you're an AJ Brown owner, and I have him in one of our leagues, people might be seeing it kind of similar to Marvin Harrison, where struggled for a few weeks. He had a big week. So you're hoping that that's the change of tides, but then another down week. So I think owners might be frustrated with him, looking to move him. So I think it's a really ripe opportunity to buy low on a pretty elite receiver.
Let's shift gears and talk running backs. which running backs popped off the page to you as buy low opportunities this week after watching week four action?
Yeah, I'll go back to the Thursday night game with Trey Benson. He didn't produce as well as his owners might have hoped for, but you know, I similar to Woody Marks, is he just passed the eye test with flying colors. With James Conner out for the season, he is going to be the lead back. Amari DiMercato got the touchdown, so that was just an unfortunate circumstance that I think Benson's going to find the end zone sooner rather than later, and he could find it more than one time. He's the lead back of that offense, and he looked like he was very good. And that offensive line is probably better than people have given them credit for. So I think there's a real opportunity to pick him up for a pretty reasonable cost. I think with the state of receivers right now, you could probably trade a low end receiver three and be able to get him to plug in as like your RB2 and be fine.
Yeah, I do think he's a solid RB2 the rest of the way. Maybe even an RB1 if you know, the Cardinals decide to lean on the run a little bit more than they already have. I feel like he's going to be in the same role that James Conner occupied. I don't think that they're going to move away from the running game just because, you know, they're missing their guy. I think Benson is as good or maybe even better than James Conner would be at this point in his career. And I agree with you. I'm happy to roster him as an RB2 wherever I can get my hands on him.
Yeah, we got to remember also, we're seeing this now, is Seattle's defense might be top three, maybe even the best defense in the league right now. So for him to be able to do what he did in a Thursday night short week against that defense is very, very encouraging.
Let's move to the NFC North, where David Montgomery had an absolute pop-off week 2 weeks ago on Monday night against Baltimore, and then this week kind of disappeared a little bit on us with only, 12 yards on nine carries or whatever it was. Just a ridiculously low output after putting up a game-breaker. Talk to me about David Montgomery and what you expect from him moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that, so Detroit week one struggles against Green Bay. People were like, oh, this is the end. They lost all their coaching staff, not the same team it once was. And then every week since then has been, nope, they are still the same Lions that we know well and true to be a very top elite offense. And we know that that backfield is split between him and Gibbs. And the goal line carries are around, speaking from memory here, I think they're around 50-50, but Montgomery's found the end zone three times for the first 4 weeks. And last week was the odd time that he didn't find the end zone. There's not very many running backs in the league that you would expect to have like a 75% chance of scoring a touchdown in a week. Like, that just provides you with the safest floor you can ask for. So I think Montgomery's in a situation now coming off an off week where you can get a piece that sees a lot of field time and has a high touchdown opportunity for a really cheap cost.
Absolutely. One running back that I'm actually looking to buy low on, and I apologize, Chris, I'm surprising you with this a little bit because I didn't put it on the show sheet, is New Orleans Saints running back Kendre Miller. Watching, you know, what I have seen of the Saints, Miller seems to be more and more involved as the weeks go on. And now with the team being 0-4 and under a new regime, as far as the coaching staff goes, I wouldn't be shocked if the Saints lean on their younger running back, kind of see what they have in Miller. Because Kamara's a known commodity, right? Like Alvin Kamara, we know what he is. We know what he can be. Yes, I know Taysom Hill could be coming back soon, which is going to throw a weird wrench into things again. But I think Kendre Miller could be a guy that we see used more and more often as the Saints kind of try to get their footing as the season progresses.
I'm glad you brought him up. I think I had actually mentioned him as one of the deep sleepers in our preseason, one of our episodes preseason. I love Kendre, and you know, I think this is another situation where I think last year with all the kind of veteran running backs and the trades, people were talking about the age cliff and 30-year-old running backs and how they often get injured. And we didn't see a whole lot of that last year. Last year was probably one of the more healthier running back years. But that seems to be the case this year. You know, Najee going down, James Conner, like we just talked about. So Kamara has an injury history. There is the potential there that even if the Saints are kind of still balancing that that workload between the two, there could be a huge opportunity in the event that Kamara does see any time, you know, if he has even a tweak that he misses a few weeks, that I think Kendre would be a very safe play at that point.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad we agree there. And like you said, he's been on your radar for a while, and I think that he might even be on the waiver wire in some spots. So if he's out there, scoop him up. And if not, offer one of your bench players for him, maybe like a Josh Palmer, who knows. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk stock up and who we're selling high on after this. Welcome back to Ball Street, the Cubulus Stock Exchange. Buy low, sell high. That's business on Ball Street, baby. Make sure you come to Cubulus and check out all the things we have going, especially the What We Saw column. What We Saw is your weekly shortcut to smarter fantasy football decisions. The Cubulus team of analysts watch every game and goes beyond the box score to deliver the most important observations, actionable, contextual insights that shape your next lineup move. Make sure to check us out on Cubulus.com and in the fantasy football subreddit every Monday morning, where our analysts are very accessible. You can ask them pretty much any question about the games they covered, and our team usually does a pretty good job of answering as many questions as we can throughout the week, but mostly on Mondays. Don't forget all of our weekly web content, including the Start Sit column, weekly rankings. We've also expanded the QBL podcast network. Jay does a great job with Sunday Best. That's our lead analyst, Jay Felicio. Brian and his crew do a great job with the Waiver Wire show, the weekly forecast, and of course our show, Ball Street, which you're listening to right now. And also make sure to check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/theQBList. where we're posting all of our podcast recordings, and Jay is also chopping up several YouTube shorts. And follow us on TikTok, our newest form of social media, at QB_list. All right, we're through the promos. We've read all the fine print. Let's get to the guys whose stocks have gone up this week. And we start with the rookie running backs. We teased them a little bit earlier in the show when we were talking about Woody Marks, and there's a whole bunch to cover here, Chris. Of these handful of guys here, which ones really popped off the page to you in week four?
Yeah, I mean, the easy one that pops off is Ashton Jeanty. You know, he was the one that was the highest touted preseason, you know, draft capital. He was the savior of the Raiders. But, you know, this was finally what we had been pointing to through the first 3 weeks, is that he was every single yard that he had came after contact. And it was just a matter of time until we really saw that come to fruition in fantasy. All it took was a little bit of matchup against the Bears to see three total touchdowns. So that's great. But, you know, we saw this really kind of with all of these rookies, right? You know, it's the first few weeks of the year. You can't expect these franchises to just hand the reins off right away. They're going to keep the vets out there. They're going to have the rookies kind of get used to the playbook, pass protection, all these things that they have to come up to speed with before they can really see a lot of time on the field. And, I mean, I think for fantasy, this was the week that almost all of them broke out. I think there were seven rookie running backs in the top, I think, 25 in half PPR leagues. It was just production across the board. You had all the bell cows from Jeanty, Hampton, Judkins is turning into a bit of a bell cow, Cam Scadabo with Tyron Tracy out. All of those guys had a touchdown. Actually, I think Scadabo didn't, but he had 80 yards on the ground. He looks great. And then you have the guys who are in a split backfield, but we're seeing upticks in their snap shares and their carries. Travion, RJ Harvey, and the aforementioned Woody Marks. All these guys, roles are increasing, they're looking good on the field, and you know, this is what everyone was excited about in preseason. It's really fun.
Yeah, I think the one that caught my eye the most was RJ Harvey on Monday night. you know, granted the game script worked in his favor, right? The Broncos were beating the ever loving stuffing out of the Bengals for most of the game. But, you know, for RJ Harvey to get, you know, 14 carries and I think it was like four or five targets, including a receiving touchdown, I think speaks volumes to how far he has come as far as where he has gained trust with Sean Payton, right? Like the buzz out of Broncos camp was, oh, RJ Harvey can't pass block and they won't put him in because he can't pass protect. And now he's, you know, coming out of the backfield and catching passes and he's in there for those snaps. You know, I really like what I saw last night with the Broncos, and I'm hoping that it wasn't just the Bengals effect on Harvey. You know, Dobbins had a great game too, don't get me wrong, but I was way more excited about Harvey's production and involvement and usage and hope that it is sustained and continues to grow moving forward.
Yeah, I'm a huge RJ Harvey believer. I've been waiting for this too. I've been across, I think, the majority of my leagues, kind of waiting. I think it was like a Jordan Mason that I also had, you know, I take these guys later, hope their role increases. Mason had the injury to Aaron Jones to help propel him into the role sooner rather than later, which was nice. But RJ Harvey, and I think this game really showed, because he did score his touchdown late in the game, so people might point to that as, oh, well, the Broncos were up by a lot, so he got a lot of the work late in the game. But yes, I think the ratio that he was on the field was up a little bit later in the game, but he was still on the field splitting reps from the start. Dobbins looks good, and I don't expect this to be like a full takeover. RJ Harvey just, you know, sends Dobbins to the bench. I think it still will continue to be a bit of a split workload for the time being, but this is the split workload that we were hoping for, right? Like, we kind of figured this, he was going to have to carve out time, and he's already done so.
Yeah, this reminds me of kind of when Austin Eckler burst onto the scene in Los Angeles. I think then they were San Diego. The balance of power is shifting, and you can feel it starting to pull away from Dobbins a little bit. Not necessarily an indictment of Dobbins, but more of an endorsement of Harvey. They are seeing his potential and beginning to feed him a little bit more often. And as fantasy managers, we love to see it. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to pass catchers. Several guys had good weeks, finally, after a couple of down weeks. Probably the most notable one was Drake London. He pulled in a million passes, including a touchdown, and looked like a true alpha wide receiver again, as Michael Penix was actually able to get a little bit of time in the pocket and distribute the ball in Atlanta against the Commanders.
Yeah, we've been saying buy low on him each week. It's like, yep, well, it's another down week. Still buy low on him. He's going to come around. So seems like that opportunity may have passed, and, you know, this could be what we see from him week in and week out, as we expected from the get-go. Yeah.
I hope so. I have him in a lot of places. Yeah, for those who aren't watching on YouTube, I stuck up my fingers crossed on both hands because I am heavily invested in Drake London's production. Chris Olave, New Orleans Saints wide receiver, had a solid week, caught his first touchdown of the year as well. What did you see out of Chris Olave against Buffalo, and how are you feeling moving forward if you're an Olave manager?
If you're an Olave manager, I think you got him at an absolute discount. You know, this, I think a year ago, Drake London and him were going in the kind of early second as those, like, kind of high-end wide receiver two, low-end wide receiver one upside guys. And after all the injuries and New Orleans and the state of the team is that, I think just people have checked out on Olave and forgotten that when he's healthy, he's really good. And he is the number one on that team. And as you had mentioned before, Spencer Rattler is doing a decent job. You know, he's not the best quarterback in the league, but you're not trying to have Spencer Rattler as your quarterback in fantasy. You just need him to be able to provide the production to Olave and support him. I don't think there's too many pass catchers outside of Olave that I would want to have. I have a few shares of Rashid Shaheed just as a bench stash at this point, don't love putting him in my lineup, but I will if I need to as a spot start. Olave's the guy in that offense.
Well, speaking of the guy in that offense, Xavier Worthy came back for the Chiefs and looked like a true wide receiver one. Now, granted, Rashi Rice is coming back in 2 weeks, so we really only have one more week of Xavier Worthy wide receiver one status here in Kansas City. But do you think that Rice's return is really going to have that kind of cap on Worthy's ceiling?
I don't think so. I think they're fairly different receivers, and I think that this is an offense with Andy Reid, you know, designing plays. They're going to riff off of each other's skill sets, and they're going to be the top two options in that offense. You know, right now with the last few weeks, we've had Hollywood Brown, Juju, even Breshard Smith is getting involved. Tyquan Thornton was a deep threat for a few games here. They're really kind of scraping the barrel here to like make this offense produce. And now that they have some of their playmakers back, they'll kind of take the reins off and let them do their thing. I don't think that Rashee Rice is really going to be pulling away from Xavier Worthy. I think he's going to be pulling more away from the Juju and the Hollywood.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they will play well off of each other. I think their strengths are a little bit different. I think their weaknesses are a little bit different. And I think, like you said, Andy Reid is an offensive genius and knows how to get the best out of his skill players and will continue to do that. Speaking of another player who is performing well in the absence of a teammate, the Dallas Cowboys wide receiver George Pickens looked like an alpha without CeeDee Lamb as the Cowboys, performed well as they tied the Packers. It felt like a two mismatched teams that just happened to tie. Like, it really was one of those games where you're like, how is this game even close? And then the Cowboys took the lead and then they finished with a tie and you're like, what just happened for the past 3.5 hours? But Pickens was amazing.
That game was a lot of fun. I still hold reservations about the overtime rules, and I think college football is so much more fun, but put a pin in that for now. George Pickens, I think we all know how talented he is, and he has been the absolute king of touchdowns or huge plays being called back or ruled incomplete over after review, and just all these opportunities that never seem to come to fruition. So if you're an owner of Pickens, I hope he was in your lineup this week, because all of those opportunities did hold. He's just an absolute monster when it comes to contested catches. I thought going into the year that it was going to be to his benefit having CeeDee Lamb to help draw away the top corner of the defense so that he can really just beat up on whoever the CB2 is. And against the Packers, it just didn't really matter all that much. He's just an absolute animal, and Dak can feed him. And, you know, same as I said about A.J. Brown, put it anywhere in the area and he's going to come down with it.
Yeah, I will say the only argument against college overtime rules is that it would absolutely break fantasy. Like, if we had a 14-14 game after regulation, go and just be like, you know what, go score a touchdown. And then, you know, after three rounds of overtime, it's 35-35 and you're looking around like, my fantasy team just broke fantasy. That's my only gripe about it. So if we can figure out a way to circumnavigate that, I'm all in.
It's 2-point conversions.
There you go. I don't hate that, actually.
From the 10. It only counts as 2 points from the 10.
Okay. I'm on board. Call up Goodell. Get him on the phone. Let's move into who we are most interested in selling high. We've got a lot of guys who put up some really good performances, and I'm looking on the show sheet, and there's a couple guys on here that I might surprise you. You kind of surprised me a little bit. I want to hear your opinion on some of these dudes.
Sure. Yeah, I'll start. Guys, I'm interested in selling high at this point would be the key pieces of Miami's offense in the absence of Tyreek. I think that with Tyreek on, Waddle is going to be seen as he's going to take over all the targets. Achane too. I think people are expecting both of these guys' volume to increase and the rest stay the same. And, you know, they just played the Jets this week, who's also not a defense. It's a super strong defense. So, you know, if this is kind of the best case scenario for that offense, then, you know, it is what it is. But I think from a trade perspective, I don't think that you can evaluate Waddle or Achane to be any higher than there would be perceived at this point. You know, like with the projected increased volume, I think people are going to be putting them on a pedestal, and whether you see that production would only maintain that value. And if they don't, then their value is going to decrease. So Miami's not an offense that I have a lot of faith in to continue to produce. So if I had these guys, I'm probably looking to cash out right now.
The Darren Waller performance didn't move the needle for you on Miami?
I mean, hey, if he's going to be their Jonnu Smith 2.0, then that's even more reason to sell Achane and Waddle.
That's fair. I have another name that I put on the sell high list that I think you might disagree with, but my reasoning is very similar to what yours was with, you know, this guy is projected for his highest, you know, his value has peaked, it feels like. And that's Tampa Bay wide receiver Emeka Ebuka. You know, Godwin came back last week and Mike Evans is coming back soon. There's going to be a lot of mouths to feed in Tampa Bay here coming up. And I don't know that Igbuka's production can stay at the lofty level it's been for the first 4 weeks of the season. That's not to say that I think he is a bad player by any means. I just think that his value is as high as it's ever going to be right now. So I think that at least shopping him around is a good idea. Now, what you get in return, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be a justified trade, right? You're not just selling him for pennies on the dollar. You're selling him high, which means you want dollars on the dollar. If I can get, you know, a legit wide receiver one, legit wide receiver, like top end wide receiver two, low end wide receiver one, in exchange for Igbuka, like if I can move Igbuka for Drake London, I am doing it 9 times out of 9, 11 times out of 10, I am doing it. But I think cashing in on Igbuka's talent right now could pay off in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I can also see it where this past week against Philly, you know, he had that 60-yard touchdown on like kind of a broken play, busted coverage situation. If that play didn't pan out the way it did, then his production this last week wouldn't have been anywhere close. You know, that huge play is really what carried him this week. So, and that's even before the mouths come back, as you mentioned. So I see where it is. For me, maybe it's just, you know, rose colored glasses with Ohio State receivers, but you know, he looks really good on the field. I think it's a situation where Baker's really good. So I think you're right. I think I'm, because I have him places and I love his production, I don't want that to stop. I'm being a little stubborn with him, but you're probably right that, you know, it probably is at his peak value. And from what I think he will continue to produce, but probably not at the same level that he is right now. That's pretty fair.
Let's move on to quarterback. There's a couple names on here that I want to get to before we wrap. You added Jackson Dart to this list after his big game and his debut. Why is Jackson Dart on your sell high list?
Yeah, I mean, he provided a spark to the offense, and I think a lot of Giants fans needed that. You know, it was really fun to watch him play. But, you know, we saw this with J.J. McCarthy in his first start. You know, he struggled for the first few quarters, and then he was great, and people thought, okay, he's being the guy he was drafted to be. And yeah, Jackson Dart was the same draft capital, but you know, that's what people in New York are expecting him to be, is that their next quarterback of the future. Without Malik Nabers there, I don't really know how well Darius Slayton's going to be able to stretch the field for them. Wandale's a pretty short area target guy. You know, I kind of see a situation where with Tyrone Tracy coming back, they're going to turn into some kind of discounted, weird, morphed version of the Chiefs offense. That's kind of just a lot of short area stuff with Scadabo being the bruiser up the middle. And I don't know how well that really lends its hand toward Jackson Dart's fantasy value. It scares me a little bit too, that he's just refuses to slide, you know, from a quarterback. You know, it's fun to see him run and you like that rushing upside, but he's got to stay healthy.
Yeah, the rushing upside carried him this week. Certainly, what do you finish with? What, 60 and a touchdown? Like, it was, he's fast, man. He's athletic. He moves like, reminds me of Justin Herbert a little bit, where you blink and he's 20 yards downfield and you're like, he doesn't look like a guy that could do that, but he can do that.
Yeah. Drake May is pretty similar. Like, you don't expect it from him, but he's got that upside.
Real quick before we wrap, is there anybody that you're willing to buy high or that you're holding high that we haven't touched on yet today?
Yeah, I think if we're sticking with quarterbacks for a second here, Bo Nix and Justin Fields. You know, Justin Fields put up over 25 fantasy points in both games that he started and finished. This is what we talked about preseason with that rushing upside. It provides just a really safe floor. You know, with the injury to Braylon Allen, I think that there's a situation where I don't know how much of a bell cow Breece Hall is going to be, but I do think that Aaron Glenn is going to keep that offense run first, and I think it's going to be a lot of read option. Justin Fields is going to be, you know, keeping it more often. The passing offense, you know, might lend its hand toward more scrambles from him. That feels really safe. And then Bo Nix was another one that was, you know, if I had talked with a few people in some other leagues where he just had a slow start to the year, and that was the case last year too. He was really bad through his first 4 weeks, and granted, he was a rookie, and this is his year too. But you know, I was waiting for this kind of game from him to see that click where, you know, everything kind of comes together, and this was that week. So I have him in one league, and I'm not moving him. I actually just traded for him in a different league. Threw him right in my lineup this last week, and I was glad that this was the week that it all worked out. So those are two guys that, you know, if you need a quarterback, they would be at a lower price than, you know, the Josh Allens, and even Mahomes is, you know, coming back to that elite category of fantasy quarterbacks. But those are two guys that can provide you with the 20 point with upside type of production.
Yeah, I agree with you on both of those. I was actually super high on Nix coming into the season. I think he's another guy whose rushing floor is a lot higher than we give him credit for. So I agree with you there. One guy that I am holding high, and this may be something that some people disagree with me on, but I'm not giving up my shares of Quentin Johnston. QJ has been way too good to get rid of. I know we have talked previously about buying low on Ladd McConkey, but really, I think it's just this Chargers offense. I want pieces of this Chargers offense, and right now the pieces are producing are Johnson and Allen. You know, I want an athletic wide receiver with a crazy catch radius that is tied to an elite quarterback like Justin Herbert. I want that. And that is Quentin Johnston. I am not getting rid of him, even though I could probably move him for like a wide receiver one or wide receiver, not wide receiver. I could probably move him for like a wide receiver two or maybe a running back two. I'm all set. I'm good with my Quentin Johnston. I'm going to continue to reap the dividends until he proves that he, like, unless he somehow regresses to what he was the last season or so, I am all aboard the Quentin Johnston train.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I think I'll just touch on Ladd real quick. I think there's a situation where, you know, as the season progresses, maybe some wear and tear on Keenan Allen. I think that's its own thing. And QJ's his own guy right now. This was the full-on QJ breakout that we were hoping for and that he was drafted to be, right? Like, he had his issues with drops, and the team stuck with him. And he seems to have finally sorted that out, and now he is that alpha wide receiver that they wanted for this offense. I fully agree with you. I wouldn't trade him away. You know, I think really the only situation is if you have so many receivers that you're just stacked and you can afford to lose one, and if you need running backs and can get two for him that are instant starters, that's really the only situation. But, you know, that's the thing with, you know, buy and sell is it always depends on your roster construction. You know, these guys like Buka, QJ, they were lower draft capital guys. So depending on how you drafted, and if you went hero RB with Chase Brown and you're just so thin at running back, you could leverage these guys if you absolutely need to, but only in the case where you have additional reliable guys in your lineup. And I think what we're saying right now is QJ is that reliable guy in your lineup and look for someone else to flip into a running back.
Yeah, absolutely. Context is key. Remember that whenever you're looking at roster construction and trying to construct a trade, for sure. Great points, Chris. Real quick, we got to wrap. Tell the people where to find you and your work.
Yeah, you can find all my stuff on QBList.com. I support our What We Saw series. And I'm on Twitter at ChrisHellyQBL and on Reddit as well. Make sure you check out our Reddit post for our What We Saw. Love chatting it up, talking about, you know, each of the games that we break down. Appreciate answering your questions.
And I'm Brett Ford. Find me at Fade That Man on social media, in the Discord. Make sure you hit us up in that Discord. Chris and I are both chopping it up all the time. Just talking football, like whatever it is, just chatting football, whether it's my venting rant on the Ravens or Chris telling us that AJ Brown is still a good receiver. We're in there and we're very active. We're very accessible. That's one of the best things about the QBList network. Is that we're all very accessible. We all just love doing what we do, and it's a fun community to be a part of. So, Chris, as always, thank you. Appreciate you, and thank you all for listening. We'll catch you all next week on Ball Street, the QB List Stock Exchange. See ya.